What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
This is the new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits, Sharia, who's making progress with meds, and Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com.
Check. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Great. All good. Perfect. Liberals go to heaven and the libertarians will be in limbo.
Nice.
Oh, I brought you guys bumper stickers too.
Ooh, cool.
Not Irvine bumper stickers yet. Those just got in. I brought you exclusive Cockpack, COCK, Central Ohio's Countering Kasich.
Cockpack, I like it. And welcome to the Katie Halper Show. I'm your host, Katie Halper. You can hear the Katie Halper Show every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on WBAI. That's WBAI.org or 99.5 FM. You can also find us on SoundCloud, on iTunes. And on iTunes, please rate and review us. Find us on Facebook, just the Katie Halper Show on Facebook. Find us on Twitter. My handle is KT Halps. That's letter K, letter T, H-A-L-P-S. The handle of my co-host Gabe Pacheco is Gabe_Pacheco. You can use the hashtag KTHelpShow. That's letter K, letter T, H-A-L-P-S-H-O-W. And find us on Patreon, patreon.com/theKatieHalperShow. Again, that's patreon.com/theKatieHalperShow. And for this week, our bonus content, which is available only for Patreon subscribers, is a discussion on Alex Jones, some bonus chatting between me and Jimmy Dore about Alex Jones, and a discussion about Keith Ellison. On today's episode, we speak to Travis Irvine, who is a libertarian, but a friend of the show nonetheless, who is running to be governor of Ohio. He's also a comedian and a journalist. I'm here with, as always.
Hey, everybody, it's Gabe Pacheco.
How's it going?
I'm living my best life.
Is that a good life?
It's as good as it gets.
That's so enthusiastic.
That's exciting. Right. It's hot here in New York and, you know, things are going fine.
All right, cool.
Just got back into town from Asheville where I did the Asheville Comedy Festival. It was super fun.
Yeah.
A lot of talented performers. You know what, though? I heard that the service industry in Asheville, they keep the minimum wage super, super low. Everyone only gets like $2 or $3 and they live mostly off tips.
Oh.
So there's got to be a way to increase the wages.
Right.
For all of the service industry people of Asheville.
I interviewed Ben Spielberg about this a while ago, who was working on this campaign in D.C. to get rid of the, basically to make tipped workers eligible for the minimum wage. Because yes. There was this big campaign by like rich restaurateurs saying that it was bad for workers to get rid of that. Of course, that wasn't true. Anyway, so maybe they could do that there.
Yeah, I was wondering because service was pretty slow, but they were also, it was this weird mix of just, it was packed with tourists, but also the service was slow in a lot of places, and it seemed like there wasn't really a lot of incentive, and it's counterintuitive, but nobody cares to work hard if they know that people are paying like $10 to $15 for, you know, a t-shirt, but they're only making $2 an hour, and
right,
they've
got to
wait,
right.
Or whatever it is,
yeah.
Like, let's say the restaurants,
sure.
You know, you've got to... Nobody's making that much money down there, and
right.
The cost of living is pretty high.
But isn't that so that you're making money off of tips?
Yes.
That's weird, though. It is counterintuitive, like you said, because you'd think that they would, you know, be more servicey, if in terms of the incentive.
Right, but there's no high, no one's paying that much for meals. It's not like a $1,000
Right, so they're not going to get a good tip anywhere.
Who cares about the $2 tip?
Right.
You know, it's better to get $10 to $15 an hour.
Oh, of course. Yes, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's funny. In like Spain, they don't have tips, you know, as much as they do here.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this kind of sounds snobby, but it's true. There definitely isn't a service industry type of culture, a servicey culture. And I remember going to like an ice cream place called Palazzo. It's kind of, I think, a well-known ice cream place in Madrid, and asking for a mint chip cone. And he gave me vanilla, which isn't even remotely similar in language or in flavor. And I was like, oh, I asked for mint. And he was like, otro día, eh? Which is like another day. Like, it's like next time, you know? Like, so straight up, just like not even pretending to care.
Nah.
And then I was like, it was just honestly, like, I wasn't going to waste the calories or the money on vanilla ice cream. So I stood my ground and I got the mint chip ice cream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's great.
I always, you know, when I was in Greece, or I've been anywhere I've gone where you don't tip that much, and or the culture just isn't like customers always right.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I just tell them like right ahead. I'm like, this is what I want. I'll even write it down and be like, this is exactly what I want. So there's no miscommunication.
Right.
And then I'll ask for the tab, the bill right away. So I'd rather pay and then linger rather than have to wait and try to flag somebody down that doesn't care.
I see. So you get up, you're like proactive, you get up and you're saying like other people there would just sit down and wait.
Right. You just wait. You're like, you know, the worst thing, the worst is just, you're expecting, I think in the US there's this like, okay, my meal is going to be 10 minutes long.
Right.
So, or they're trying to move units. So they're trying to get people out of the restaurant as quickly as possible to get more people at the table. So the staff is always asking like, hey, can I get you anything else? Here.
Intent.
Yeah. Right, can I get States, you, are you ready? You want to settle up?
Right.
Whereas, you know, somewhere else, you'll just linger at that table for two and a half hours if you don't ask for a bill.
Yeah. It's so funny. Most Americans are like, oh, I love that about Europe. It's so leisurely. You're like, nope.
Well, if you're there because you want to go see things.
It's true.
You know, that's the worst.
You're like, I want to get to the Acropolis.
Yeah. You've got an itinerary and you know, you've only got 20 minutes to eat. But on on that schedule, they're like, oh yeah, you're on vacation. Yeah. Don't you want to just hang out? Don't you want to just relax and malinger?
Right.
Until the sun goes down.
Right.
And I'm like, no, then everything's closed. I can't see. I can't do the things I came. I didn't come here to sit at this cafe.
Right. That's funny. We should have like a reality TV show where we travel around the world. And it would be very interesting to see our kind of competing priorities. I'm a big lingerer, cafe lingerer.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
And we could wear big stopwatches on our necklaces and be like, what are you counting down for? And it's like, I'm just seeing how long it takes.
Right.
Till they come, till they acknowledge that we're here.
Right.
Take our order.
Did you see that movie, The Trip? We could do like our own version of The Trip.
I saw it a while ago, but you know.
Great, great impersonations of Michael Caine.
Well, broadsheet journalists have described my impressions as stunningly accurate.
Well, they're wrong. I've not heard your Michael Caine, but I assume it would be something along the lines of, my name's Michael Caine.
That is where you are so wrong. And you can look at my live video for proof, because that's the very thing I don't do.
Do you, Michael Caine?
Okay. I say, Michael Caine used to talk like this in the 1960s, right? But that has changed. And I say that over the years, Michael's voice has come down several octaves. Let me finish. And all of the cigars and the brandy, don't let me finish, can now be heard.
Okay.
I've not fucking finished in the back of the voice. And the voice now. Well, I've still not finished the voice.
Because you're panicking.
Because you look like you're about to bloody talk. Let me finish. Right, so Michael Caine's voice now in the Batman movies and in Harry Brown. I can't go fast because Michael Caine talks very, very slowly.
Right, this is how Michael Caine speaks. Michael Caine speaks to his nose like that. He gets very, very specific. It's very like that. When he gets loudly, it gets very loud indeed. It gets very specific. It's not quite nasal enough the way you're doing it, all right? You're not doing it the way he speaks. You're not doing it with the kind of... And you don't do the broken voice when he gets very emotional. When he gets very emotional indeed. She was only 16 years old. She was only 16. You're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off. That's Michael Caine.
It's funny. The customer's always right. The first thing that popped into my head for whatever reason was this episode of Saved by the Bell, where Kelly Kapowski, I believe is the character's name, who is played by Tiffany Amber Thiessen. She was a waitress, and she had a relationship with her boss.
I would love to hire you, but the owner wants an experienced waitress. I'll take a chance. I'll hire you on a probationary basis.
Oh, thank you, thank you. What does that mean?
It means we'll try it out for a couple of days, and if you do well, the job is yours.
Wow, it's interesting. I don't think they brought up the sexual harassment angle. This was pre-me, too.
The asymmetrical power dynamic. Exactly.
Right.
Are those friends of yours?
Yeah, they're just trying to make me look good.
They don't have to try very hard. You already look pretty good to me.
And I remember this part where some people who she was waiting on were not very nice to her.
Waitress, yo, is there a problem?
Yeah, you. Sid didn't order mayo.
I want the manager of this dump.
Oh, you don't have to bother him. I'll just get you a new sandwich.
And we're not paying for this garbage. Is there a problem here, Kelly?
Sweet Cheeks screwed up the order.
And her boss was like, Kelly, don't you know the customer is always right?
Kelly, you know the rules. The customer is always right.
Until now.
Until now. This order is to go. And let me give you guys a little tip. Get lost.
That really stuck with me. Then there was AC Slater, played by Mario Lopez.
Dancing with the Stars.
Dancing with the Stars, yeah. The cool thing is that they had like an interracial crush, not romance. Screech, who I think later became a porn star and maybe stabbed someone. Justin Diamond is his real name.
That's right.
Right? That's right. Speak on it. And he had a crush on Lisa, and it was cool because that was never like a taboo, you know, it just was a crush, an interracial crush.
Will you go to the prom with me?
Yeah, I'll go.
You will?
I'll go with you when worms have ears.
But they did bring up some race stuff because, of course, on like the Take Your Family's Heritage to School Day, we found out that Lisa's family was, I think they'd worked on the Underground Railroad.
And after Abraham Turtle escaped from slavery, he became a conductor in the Underground Railroad.
They had subways during the Civil War?
Under the cloak of darkness, he helped sneak other slaves, or passengers as they were secretly called, to freedom along this route from Atlanta to New York. My family calls this Underground Railroad the original Soul Train. Thank you.
Good. I think Abraham would be proud of you today. You're getting an A.
Jesse Spano, who was the feminist activist character, kind of like me in high school, she had slave transporting relatives.
My ancestors were seafaring people. They sailed around the world on ships. They were shippers. Okay, thank you. I'm finished.
And Jesse, perhaps you could tell us a bit more.
Well, they ship tea, spices, people, lumber, that kind of thing.
People?
My ancestors shipped black people, slaves, okay? They were slave traders. Lisa, can you ever forgive me? I'm so ashamed.
Well, Jesse, you had nothing to do with it.
Oh, just say it. You hate me. Unleash those centuries of repressed anger.
Jesse, you're being silly.
Calm down, Jesse. You know, we can all find things in our past that are unpleasant. But we can also learn from the mistakes of Jesse's forefathers.
Jesse had forefathers? Four allowances.
Uh-huh.
And she felt really bad about that, and then she offered to, like, shovel Lisa's snow and stuff.
Lisa, let me buy you a soda to make up for my ancestors.
No thanks, I'm not thirsty.
How about a nice tossed green salad?
How about cooling it?
I can't help it. I feel guilty. There must be something I can do.
All right, Jesse, there is one thing you can do for me. I have not been to the mall in weeks.
I will take you there. I'll carry you on my back.
There's a picture driving Miss Dizzy.
It was kind of the pre-white privilege checking culture. Jesse Spano was there at the forefront. Am I leaving any of the characters out? Mr. Belding. I think Belding was the...
Does great on the college circuit. People love to hire him to perform at colleges.
Really?
Yeah.
The guy who plays him?
Yeah.
Interesting.
How you guys doing? I don't think I'll ever make it on time. You know the words?
So I guess he's a stand-up.
I don't know what he does.
I am the guy from the show that would not die, Saved by the Bell. AOL and TMZ voted. AOL said Mr. Belding was the number one principal on television and an icon, according to TMZ. Thank you very much. Does get a little awkward when you're getting a lap dance. Mr. Belding! Ooh, Mr. Belding. I'm just saying.
I do remember him saying, remember, the last syllable of principal is principal. Because he was the principal. So he's showing that he's a pal.
Showing 87 countries around the world. Who knew? You guys have favorite episodes? Yeah, what's your favorite episode?
Everyone knows about the anti-drug episode. That's really good.
It wasn't drugs.
It wasn't drugs. It was no-dos. It was Jesse on no-dos, for God's sakes.
When Jesse Spano takes caffeine pills.
Pills? You mean you really are taking drugs?
I need them.
Jesse, give me those.
I need them back. I have to sing.
Jesse, you can't sing tonight.
Yes, I can.
I'm so excited.
I'm so excited.
I'm so scared.
Jesse.
How did Zach cure Jesse? He grabbed her by the shoulders and went, Jesse, knock it off. And she was fine. Can you imagine if we had Lindsay Lohan on our show? We'd cure her just like that. Lindsay, knock it off. And she lives happily ever after.
Anyway, it's a great show. Not as good as 21 Jump Street, which really, really drove home a lot of social.
Then really launched the Fox network.
Did it?
Yeah.
Interesting. 21 Jump Street. That's
Fox
ironic.
Fox had great shows.
Did, right?
When it first came out in the mid-80s, there was Women Behind Bars, which was a precursor to Orange is the New Black. It was a sitcom following women in cages.
Wow.
Also, there was Werewolf, the TV show, which followed the story of a young man who became a werewolf at night and the bounty hunter that followed him from town to town.
Wow.
As he solved crimes. Kind of like a werewolf version of the A-Team.
Right.
And what else was on? 21 Jump Street, which was like, you know, a heartthrob show. You had a young Johnny Depp on it. But what a terrible show, though. Bunch of narcs.
I know.
Dressed up as baby-faced kids, going into schools, stopping teen prostitutes and pill pushers.
Going undercover, right.
Yeah.
I had, Judy got the character, they did talk about rape a lot.
On 21 Jump Street?
Yeah. I feel like the character Judy, though, who was played by Holly Robinson, who was then on Hanging with Mr. Cooper, I think she got raped multiple times.
He raped me.
What?
Evan Roberts. He raped me last night.
On the show?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Maybe three?
Well,
That's a lot of times
for a TV show.
Yeah, it is.
Same character.
Yeah.
Lightning striking three times.
Yeah, it's true. And then they...
You know what I call that? Lazy writing.
Lazy writing, right. It's true. Or really pre-Me Too, really predicting a lot of Me Too culture. Prescient writing or lazy writing? You decide.
Sure. Well, you want to revisit the same plot line over and over again? I guess that's what every episode of Law & Order SVU is.
It's true. But to be fair, on SVU, it is different characters.
Yes.
Yeah.
Also, you know what you're getting into because it's called SVU.
Right. Special Victims Unit, right? Then there's also a really good episode with Doug Pinhole, who is Dom DeLuise's son, who had like a Central American girlfriend, I think.
What are you reading?
El Mundo. It's a newspaper from my country.
El Salvador. Usted tienes huevos muy bonitas.
I have pretty eggs.
Is that what I said?
Yes.
Eyes. I meant to say eyes. You have pretty eyes. World class, I'm telling you. Your eyes are better than Chef Ping's spicy lobster.
Like she had a Daniel Ortega poster in her apartment?
Probably.
I was a teacher in Chalatenango. We traveled from village to village teaching literacy. You see, we are a nation of farmers, and I gave my people new seed to plant. Seeds of hope. Seeds of equality. This was unacceptable to the people in power, the people who have the money. Because I was a teacher, Soldiers took me to prison and kept me 10 days. My family and friends could not find me. I disappeared.
And it got really into like the death squads being supported by the United States history.
What's going to happen to her?
Over 90% of the Salvadorian refugees are sent back. It's ironic. We open our doors to almost everyone. But because El Salvador is considered a democracy, we turn a blind eye to the slaughter.
Slaughter? What are you saying?
If she's sent back, she'll be in a lot of danger.
Damn. Damn.
All we can do, what we have to do, is stand by her.
What are you doing?
I'm asking you to marry me. I don't want to lose you.
I don't want you to lose me either.
All you gotta do is say yes.
Yes.
Really sad episode. Quite moving.
And how long have you and Miss Cabarrus known each other?
5 days, Your Honor.
And you were married after Miss Cabarrus was arrested and ordered before the court, is that right?
Yes.
Officer Penhall, under the Marriage Fraud Act of 1986, it seems clear to me that this marriage is strictly a measure to avoid deportation.
No. No, that's not true.
The order to place the respondent under custody pending immediate deportation remains.
You cannot send me back.
Miss Cabarrus.
You cannot send me back.
So shout out to 21 Jump Street for going there early on, even though Gabe thinks it's maybe problematic. I mean, every show romanticizes the police.
Yeah.
Right? And it's weird because I really enjoy like SVU. I really enjoy Law & Order. I really like 21 Jump Street. And I feel a little weird about it.
You know, if you grow up watching Cobra and Tango and Cash and K-9, it's very difficult to wrap your head around how brutal the police really are.
Right. K-9, by the way, there are two movies that are basically the same thing. K-9 and Turner and Hooch.
That's correct. That's yeah. Correct. A lovable Tom Hanks cop.
Turner and Hooch.
You know, we've known each other for a while now. I think it's safe for me to say, but are you aware of your drooling problem?
Yeah, a lovable Tom Hanks cop with a dog, and the not so lovable, because he never is, Jim Belushi cop with a dog. Yeah.
They're the two toughest cops in town. One's just a little smarter than the other. James Belushi in K-9.
Very excited to be talking to none other than Travis Irvine. You may recognize him from his political career. You may recognize him from former appearances on the Katie Halper Show. And he is running for governor. And he is a libertarian. So, Travis, welcome.
Hello, it's good to be back. I should specify I'm running for governor of Ohio.
So I just think of you as so Ohioan that I forgot to mention that. Yeah.
It applies to no one except your listeners in Ohio.
Yeah.
Which I know there are at least a couple.
How do you know? Did you get fan mail from them when you were on the Katie Halper Show?
Yeah, yeah. No, I know there's just a lot of Bernie people in Ohio. So I'm sure you got some followers there. You guys should come visit sometime. We could do like a little fundraiser show like we did in 2016.
Yeah, and one of my favorite podcasts is based out of Ohio as well. Oh, yeah. The Street Fight guys who have also been on this show.
Yeah, we had them on. Yeah,
America's number one anarcho-comedy radio show.
Yeah, you know, we need more anarcho-comedy. Yeah. It's like the anarcho-capitalist.
It's a mashup.
Which is a libertarian wing now of the party.
Oh,
the anarchists. They're a capitalist. Yeah.
That just sounds like disruptive entrepreneurs or anarcho-capitalists.
You know, that's what I like about everything that's happening in politics now is that there's so many different factions forming, but they're all anti-establishment.
Right.
You know, we're all trying to
oppose the status quo.
Oppose the status quo in our own way. So libertarians, same deal. They've been at it since 1971. I wasn't born until 1983, and lo and behold, their ideas starting to make a lot more sense to a lot of millennials. You know, that's, I think we talked about last time I was on. I love how the libertarian Ron Paul kids on the right and the Bernie Sanders left-leaning progressive kids on the left, you know, I think they're all kind of finding common ground, and we're going to work together on a lot of things we agree on. And on the things we disagree, those will be civilized discussions.
Like civil liberties.
Yeah, well, we all agree on those.
Say one of the things there won't be debate about is civil liberties.
There will be no debate on civil liberties or bringing down the military budget or
drug legalization.
Drug legalization, certainly. In fact, my top platform components that appeal to people on the left is legalizing marijuana, which Dennis Kucinich, who challenged in the Democratic primary, he was all for that. Criminal justice reform, certainly. Pardoning on nonviolent drug offenders in the prisons in Ohio. We spend about $500 million just on incarcerating those people alone per year in Ohio. So that's a, you know, not just a progressive issue, but if you're a big old tax dollar watchdog conservative, well, that should appeal to you too. And then also ending the death penalty. The death penalty ends up being more expensive for taxpayers, but also I feel inhumane for the state to be in the killing business. And, you know, I think a report out of Texas showed that they spent $2.3 million housing someone on death row compared to, much cheaper to just for a life sentence. So that actually saves people money on there too. So
why does it cost so much?
Because they always appeal. Death row cases always appeal, and it becomes a very long, arduous court legal process.
Ooh, litigious.
And then there's the actual, like, the getting of the drugs and
the
electricity
drugs, right, yeah,
for the chair or the rope for the hanging. It's all very expensive rope.
I don't think they do hanging anymore, do they?
Not in Ohio. I think we're all legal ejection.
Yeah. You know, this is
lethal,
exciting.
Excuse me, lethal ejection.
Yeah,
I should
not,
learn these
it should
terms.
Not be legal. You know what's exciting is that the Pope changed.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then that happened. So I already had my platform plank out there, and then the Pope came out and for abolishing the death penalty. I was like, me and the Pope.
That's how you're going to say the Pope became a libertarian.
The Pope basically became a libertarian, and he endorsed. I can't.
Oh my God, you're going to hell.
He endorsed me.
He ordered a change to the Catechism of the Catholic Church. And he changed existing language to read the death penalty is inadmissible because it is an attack on the inviolability and dignity of the person. The church will work with determination for its abolition worldwide. It's a little weird. I mean, I think that's great. Mm-hmm. If anything, it's kind of weird that the Catholic Church has to come out as anti-death penalty because the whole, like, what story is more anti-death penalty than the whole Jesus one?
Right.
Well, but he died for our sins.
Oh, so they're just hoping more people will die for our sins?
Yeah, there's something.
That's
something.
A fun twist.
It's true. Yeah, yeah.
Sexy about being a martyr. And,
right.
And those abs. Those killer abs.
They never.
Well,
said,
you have to hold up yourself really well.
That's
you know?
A long time.
There was no anti-crucifixion campaign.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Right.
But it is. I mean, of course, they're looking at the silver lining of Jesus' crucifixion, right? Like that's it had to happen. A necessary evil.
We got to break some eggs to make these
good,
sweet
omelets.
Salvation omelets.
Salvation omelets. But you know, you'd think that given that that was a bad thing and it's not supposed to happen again. Right? Like, it's not we don't have a bunch of Jesuses. I mean, I don't care, but the Christians are the ones who are saying that. It's not like there are more Jesuses. So why crucify more people? Which comes, we'll get to that later. There's actually a recent crucifixion.
Is there a reason? Yeah. What?
Yeah, guess which country it was in?
Israel?
No, but the other place that no one likes to talk about that's friends with the United States, Israel is like our open boyfriend. It's like our open, not open like polyamorous. It's our official relationship.
Right.
Then we have a side piece.
Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
Oh,
yo,
my Lord.
Saudi Arabian side pieces.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And Israeli, what would it be? Wifey? Like our official girlfriend or our official partners is Israel. And then, Saudi Arabia.
And Saudi Arabia is like our side piece.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a very good analogy for a very dangerous foreign policy situation.
It is. But you got to break it down for people, right?
Right.
I mean, what's more accessible than that?
Yeah, so they had a crucifixion there just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah,
making waves. It sounds like
it's back.
It sounds like the bad
it's
guy
back,
from The Stand
baby.
Just
and
took
it's
over.
Sexier than ever.
Yeah, crucifixions. Yeah. I don't know if they used nails or if they used ropes.
Well,
yeah, I haven't
I
seen any images of it yet.
Gosh, I mean, the thing about Saudi Arabia is it's so frustrating because I'm sure Katie knows all the Russia hate. That's been spewing out because Trump and the Russians meddled in the election and they were pro Jill Stein and they were pro this and
right.
that. And Saudi Arabia has meddled in almost all of our elections and as well as Israel. I mean, AIPAC is a lobbying group that donates to, so many congresspeople and senators and presidential candidates. And the Saudis definitely always had their horse in the race, too. So,
yeah, those are official meddlers, though.
Those are like official meddlers.
You know,
they're recognized meddlers.
Yes.
Russia, you're not allowed to meddle.
That's a dark horse
Don't
meddler.
Don't you be meddling over here. Right.
And, you know, the irony in terms of Israeli meddling is that Michael Flynn, you know, Trump's Michael Flynn, he lied to the FBI about talking before the inauguration to Russia. But the irony is he was talking on behalf of Israel. Jared Kushner, Trump's son-in-law, had him speak to Russia to block or delay a UN resolution against the illegal Israeli settlements Remember that famous moment that was like a huge victory for human rights because the president of the United States decided not to veto a very just thing that was condemning illegal settlements.
Right.
So the irony is that it didn't work, which shows you that I guess Trump and Russia aren't that tight, because if they had been Trump and Putin, then they would have voted to veto or delay that resolution.
Jeez.
I know. So anyway, if you want to talk about Russia, that's fine, but you may want to mention Israel once or twice. So the only real documented collusion that we have so far, or one of the first ones, the trailblazer, if you will, was over Israel, was on the behest of Jared Kushner for Israel.
In Saudi Arabia, I remember one of my favorite parts about Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11.
Yeah.
He really pointed out how in bed the Saudi government was with our government, but not just that, the royal family and the Bush family.
Yeah.
You know, that was a very cozy relationship that lasted mysteriously well, considering after 9/11,
right,
we were at war with everyone else.
Aren't there more than one Saudi prince named George Herbert Walker? Don't they?
There's something like that. Yeah,
they swap names, those two families.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I haven't met Osama bin Bush yet, but yeah. I'm sure he's out there.
The House of Bush.
Yeah, right.
Fahrenheit 9/11, we saw like all these Saudi people being like flown out of the country. Right?
After 9/11, specifically flew out the bin Laden family. That was a big to-do.
So there's some exciting news coming out of Saudi Arabia, which is that they crucified a man in Mecca while aggressively calling out Canada over human rights. And I'm reading from Business Insider. They use capital punishment for crimes like homosexuality or anti-government activities, though crucifixions are rare. It's a real special event, I guess. It's lashed out at Canada, sometimes harshly, since Ottawa last week called for the release of jailed women's rights activists in the kingdom, and Saudi Arabia expelled Canada's ambassador. Saudi Arabia has restricted travel, medical access, and student scholarships to Canada while using its state-owned media to depict the country as unjust. That's interesting. I mean, Canada's definitely not on the... I mean, we know Canada's not as great as people like to think it is, but they're not particularly bad human rights violators. That's not particularly there.
That's not what they're known for, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mainly mooses. They're known for mooses.
And extreme graft when it comes to maple syrup.
Yes. Oh, they really run the maple syrup racket around
the
world.
They do,
Those jerks.
I mean, Justin Trudeau is annoyingly Obama-ish, like super woke, but like bad for the environment. He's definitely that, but that's not Saudi Arabia's issue with him, obviously.
Right.
Also, I feel like Saudi Arabia's kind of like it's a losing campaign. If you want to play the human rights card, I'm not sure you're going to win that game.
Yeah, no, that's like the what is that? The pot calling the kettle racist.
Yeah, the pot calling the kettle crucifying.
Yes.
When they're not.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Saudi Arabia is atrocious people on the left and the right all know this.
Right. At the same time that this happened, this crucifixion, Saudi Arabia's state media tweeted a graphic which appeared to show an Air Canada airliner heading toward the Toronto skyline in a way that recalled the September 11th, 2001 terrorist attacks.
Oh, my God.
And, of course, as you were alluding to before, Travis and Gabe, 15 of the 19 September 11th hijackers were from Saudi Arabia.
And none were from Iraq?
Not a single
one.
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought they were all traveling on that plane with weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah,
with
Saddam Hussein.
Yeah. Yellow cake. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. I remember the yellow cake. I mainly remember the Chappelle Show skit, though, where they were, like, eating literal yellow cake.
This nigga out here buying yellow cake from the motherland.
Are you sure it was yellow cake?
Y'all niggas don't believe me. I got some yellow cake right here. Look, you see, you believe this shit now?
Don't drop that shit.
You know I know what to do with it. Well, I got it wrapped up in this special CIA napkin.
Don't drop that shit. Yeah.
The tweet that had the infographic of the plane flying into a Toronto building. It said, as the Arabic saying goes, he who interferes with what doesn't concern him finds what doesn't please him. Hashtag Saudi Arabia, hashtag Canada.
I love it. I love that the Canadians and the Saudis are finally having a go.
A head-to-head, right?
Yeah. You know what it probably is,
though? If
you
don't start something, there won't be nothing.
You know it probably is, though? Deep down, secretly, they're probably just jealous of each other's oil profits. This is probably just another one of those oil wars, oil corporation wars, because Canada's got a lot of oil, and Saudi Arabia still's got a lot of oil. So it could just come down to that. I have no proof of this. I could be fake news, but...
That's right. This is all bells and whistles.
Right.
Yeah. You know, people love saying that we need to talk about Syria and there's a dictatorship in Syria. And again, like, I just don't see the value. Like, the United States government is always attacking Syria, and we don't want to see war there. And it's kind of weird when even like liberals who claim to not like Trump, they get mad at people like Max Blumenthal, all friends of the show. It's Max Blumenthal, Ben Norton, Ronnie Kalik. They've all been on the show. Me, they get mad that we don't constantly condemn Assad, Bashar Assad. It's like, well, no one really thinks he's a good guy. There's not a lot of pro-Assad, pro-Syria PR. There's tons of pro-Israel PR. And Saudi Arabia, which is the worst of all when it comes to human rights, doesn't really get any attention. And why would you, as a journalist or as a figure, draw attention to the government that everyone already hates, like that the United States government already hates? It's right. Just a weird, I think, priority.
Like that
demand.
Road's already been paved.
Yeah, right. You know? Right. And like, God forbid we talk about the countries that, like, if we talk about Israel, I'm not worried that we're going to invade Israel. You know, right. I am worried we're going to go to war with Syria.
Yeah. I mean, in a lot of ways, we already are
right,
kind of involved
exactly.
with the,
that's
with the
actually
proxy
good.
War.
Right. And we bombed them, right?
Yeah. We bombed some of the airports.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so fun talking about all this stuff.
Right.
So good on the Pope. I really like this Pope, I got to say.
Everyone loves this Pope.
Yeah. Except who? The right Christian.
Except
right,
people who hate the Pope.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
What were you raised Catholic? What's your?
I was raised a Presbyterian. So all I remember is we didn't clap for songs in church, and everyone was very nice.
Okay.
And the potlucks were very plentiful.
Nice.
And I still actually go for Christmas. But you know, I think my religion is still just like a sense of like treating people with respect. And then once I learned that and valued that, then I kind of. Well, you know, I'm like a lot of millennials, more spiritual.
Ah, spiritual. Do you like meditate or have crystals or what's your?
Yeah, so many crystals, man. Yeah, no. I remember I lived in the Bahamas after I graduated school.
How long?
For a year. It was like a gap year type thing.
Okay.
After college.
A lot of snorkeling or
a
was
lot of
it?
Snorkeling, scuba diving, sailing, and then hanging out with Rastas. And I grew my white person dreadlocks.
Oh, nice.
I remember
okay.
at that
well,
time
we'll
that I had when I ran for
show.
Mayor. Yeah.
You were like Ross Trent.
Yes,
yeah, that's a way to put it.
And last week I read a book about Selassie I, then told my Boba Clot parents I was switching religions. Excuse me!
But yeah, I wanted to start my own religion. I remember it's a mix of like being agnostic and Rastafarianism. It's called Agnostafarianism.
I like it.
You just smoke weed and you don't know what's going on.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. Right?
Sounds a lot less, ignorance is bliss, right? Not calling Rasta ignorant, but when you smoke weed and don't know
and just
know what's
accept
going on.
That you don't know. That's right. Kind of how I feel about, you know, no one really knows what's beyond.
Are you going to run on that?
I don't think that's a good idea.
Okay.
Enlightened right. ignorance.
Yeah, enlightened ignorance.
Consider
absolutely.
Us your focus group. We're going to tell you not to run on that.
Yeah, thanks. That's
you're
good.
Welcome. Yeah.
I hope they, you know, it is interesting the religious aspects coming into play. I definitely get a lot of people asking about the pro-life, pro-choice issue. Libertarians, of course, are pro-choice.
I do, you know, there's something about the, like, when presidential candidates, they, you know, everyone's trying to get them with a gotcha question.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, well, what do you think about our relationship with Kazakhstan right now, for example? I'd be like,
gotcha.
I literally would probably say, like, I don't know. Like, I'll get back to you. We all have smartphones. Let me Wikipedia who's in charge of that country right now.
Right.
And, like...
I'll just be like, I thought Borat was a great movie.
Yeah.
Right.
A like, great man.
He's doing a great job. Right. Is he the president? I assume he's the president. Kazakhstan.
Don't worry. I'll hire the best.
Yeah, the best.
I'll hire experts.
Best people, yeah.
So tell us about your political career and why you decided to run for gov.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, I ran for mayor of my hometown 11 years ago. Documentary on Amazon Prime, American Mayor. Check it out. By getting involved, you can make a difference, especially millennials. Don't shy away from the local elections. I then went on to work in Capitol Hill for a little bit before moving to New York City. And then in 2010, I actually ran for U.S. Congress with the Libertarian Party of Ohio. I'd always kind of considered myself independent. And then I figured at least on the federal level, foreign policy, things like that, I agreed with libertarians, on more things than independents or greens or anything like that. So I devoted myself fully to the Libertarian Party of Ohio. And, of course, 2012 worked with Gary Johnson's presidential campaign after graduating from Columbia. So that was all very rewarding. And then what happened in Ohio, basically, the Libertarian Party was really well put together in Ohio. We had our full statewide slate of candidates in 2010. We were Gary Johnson's favorite state to come campaign in 2012 because we just really had it together. And then what happened in 2013 and 14 was the Republicans felt threatened by us. They started to see that our ideas were getting some pull. We starting to, you know, I think they really thought that we were like a threat to their state house elections, but also specifically Mr. John Kasich, who was running for re-election in 2014. And I think at the time knew that he was going to try to run for president in 2016. So, the Republicans railroaded through this legislation, took away minor parties' ballot access. It is now required for them to get 3% of the popular vote in a governor election or a presidential election for the minor party to keep that status. So the Green Party is in the same boat. The Green Party got 3% in 2014, myself included. As a libertarian, I voted Green because I was just like, you know, want to mess with the system.
Yeah, the duopoly.
Yeah, so they got their 3%. So they have ballot access. And then Gary Johnson got 3% in the 2016 race, but as an independent, because we couldn't get him on the ballot as a libertarian because of the ballot access laws. And then lo and behold, sure enough, the Republican-dominated Supreme Court in Ohio decided that his results would not count as a libertarian. They would keep him independent. So the Libertarian Party of Ohio and the National Libertarian Party had to put in $250,000 into a signature drive to get 100,000 signatures just to become a recognized minor political party again. That is a very unsustainable model for any political party. So my job this year, what I've been tapped to do, is get 3% minimum, hopefully more, in the governor's race this year, which they trust me to do because I've run for office twice. I've got 5 to 4% each time. And also, every time I've run, my videos get national earned media. My campaign jingles on the Jay Leno show when I ran for mayor. Wow. And then my old campaign commercial, give the two-party system the third finger.
Nice.
Where everyone shows their ring finger to the camera. That got on PBS and CNN.
Their ring finger,
not the middle finger.
Oh, why? Is there a legal issue with that?
Yeah, you don't want everyone flicking off the camera, actually. Okay. But it's like that bit we used to do in third grade where you'd be like, you'd flick someone off with the ring finger. And then they'd be like, hey. And they'd be like, no, check it out. It's not the
little loophole.
Yeah. So, and that's the loophole how we got that commercial on TV.
Got it.
And that got on PBS and CNN. So
it's like those shirts that say FCUK.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Your brain reads it the same way like, anyway.
What? And then it's like, oh, but it's not.
Right. Yeah. Which I think may have started with French Connection UK, the clothing store.
I like that. I like to make that part of my campaign, actually. Well, and that's actually
a
thing.
I
brought you guys these bumper stickers. This is in 2014 because I had no candidate to support in the governor's race in Ohio. I started an anti-Kasich pack in Ohio called Central Ohioans Countering Kasich, COCK. We worked long and hard to give him the shaft, and he blew it. It was all puns. It was mainly a pun campaign.
So that's called cock pack, and you're trying to give him the shaft, okay?
Yeah.
And he blew it.
He blew it. That was another fun one. So, yeah, that was 2014. I mean, look, Kasich, you know, he's an arrogant man. I don't think he's necessarily done a good job in Ohio. The only thing you can point to and say he's done a good job is we have a rainy day fund in Ohio. We're supposed to, it's in the Constitution, have a balanced budget every year. So anytime you save money or you lose money, it all comes out of a rainy day fund. So he turned the rainy day fund from 89 cents to $2 billion. So you got to give him credit there. But he did that on the backs of a lot of people and industries and entities that he probably shouldn't have done that. So it's all good. I'm here to challenge the Republicans. I'm here to challenge the Democrats. And more importantly, you got a millennial option running for governor of Ohio. And I think millennials, you know, whether on the left or the right, I think we all got to start getting more involved.
That's right. The reason that the election was lost was because people didn't turn out.
I would agree. In Ohio, Gary Johnson got 25% of the vote amongst millennials. Wow. But granted, not a lot of them showed up. So, but it's interesting that I think millennials are kind of more going that way. You know, I don't know how many of those people were former Bernie supporters, but, you know, I think the future is, you know, the progressive Bernie kids take over the left, the libertarian Ron Paul kids take over the right, and we work on all the things we agree on and go from there.
Right. So, and they say that also Gary Johnson probably helped take away votes from Trump.
Yeah, statistically, libertarians draw equally from everyone. We equally take from Republicans, Democrats, and Independents. Mm-hmm. But then we also bring in that I wouldn't have voted.
Right.
Vote.
But four, yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of split into four groups. But in 2016 specifically, we took about 60% Republican because there's enough Republicans that they were just like, I don't want to vote for Trump. But then that was all, you know, countered by the fact that I think this report just came out this last week that Trump won with people who would have not have voted.
Right.
People who have not voted in years and years.
Yeah, cicada voters, as Ben Jealous said on our show when we interviewed him the day of.
Little insects that have been hibernating underground for 17 years.
Yeah, so they don't get polled. They're unlikely voters, too. Yeah.
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 And as Ben Jealous said, who's running for governor of
Maryland?
Running
for governor
of Maryland?
He won
his
such
primary.
An exciting gubernatorial year.
I know.
We got Cynthia Nixon in New York, Ben Jealous in Maryland, me in Ohio. Yeah. It's going to be fine.
It's going to be great.
Where are you getting your funding right now?
You know, if you head to IrvineForOhio.com, you can make a donation right now. And we've got a great swag. We've got buttons, T-shirts, bumper stickers. We're working on the yard signs. The funding is mainly grassroots right now in Ohio. It's coming from a lot of people who, you know, here's the thing. When a political party is smashed the way the Libertarians were in Ohio, the infighting and just the pieces have been scattered into the wind. So we're just, you know, finding all the old activists we had back in 2010 and 2012. They're getting back involved. About two-thirds of our activists right now are new, and they are brought over from the 2016 election. They discovered the Libertarian Party, and now they're on board. So amongst all these nice folks, we don't have a lot of funding, but I have no doubt that the funding will start to come in from Libertarian Party activists all around the country. And then the more I get out there and talk to people at county fairs and Tea Party meetings and marijuana rallies and gun rights rallies and, you know, all these different factions that the Libertarians tend to bring in, I do think people start resonating to our message and opening up their pocketbooks. Also, videos. Anytime I make a video... Again, those are the thing I did right in the last two times I ran for office. We usually put it on the internet first and then say donate so we can get it on the air. And then once it's actually on the air, then it's an officially recognized campaign video once it's actually on TV. And that's when, you know, organizations that kind of keep track of political campaign videos will, you know, take stock in them. And
so you've done that. You will make a video. You will air it online. Mm-hmm. You will ask for funds and then you get to pay for a spot.
Yep. Put it on TV. Absolutely. Now, the big spots, you know, are pretty expensive, but if I can get an anti-Mike DeWine video up on Fox News in rural areas in Ohio, that's actually a lot more affordable and, frankly, a lot more effective.
A lot more bang for your buck.
Yes.
In the election the other day, there was a very close race in Ohio.
Yes, the 12th district. That's the district I ran in 2010 as a Libertarian.
Wow. So what? And, of course, the narrative there is that a Green spoiled it, even though the Republican beat the Dem by a much greater...
Yeah, no, I do not ever... Well, we've talked about this. I never give in to this fact that the Greens or the Libertarians are sucking votes. No, those votes came from people who were not going to vote Republican and Democrat no matter what. But it's encouraging for the Democrats, you know, because, yes... that district is fiercely Republican, has been for decades. When I ran against Pat Teaberry, my 4% was the 4% that made him lose Franklin County, but then he swung in and won with Delaware County. So it's, back then it was only
D.C., Delaware County.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was only three counties back then. They since re-gerrymandered it, so I am no longer in the 12th. Okay. I think they're nervous that I'd run against them again. So they carved me out, and they carved in more Republican areas. So, yeah, last time he won like 60 to 30%. So the fact that they got this close is already, like, very encouraging.
And, of course, the fact that they're blaming the loss on, like, a Green who attracted very little support is peak Democratic distorting and framing
of a
loss.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Right? It's like they spent $4 million on advertising that last week. The Green, Joe, who I feel I definitely have met at some point, at various political functions. He doesn't have any money. He's just on the ballot. You can't, I just don't understand how Democrats keep doing that game where they're just, they're like, we spent all this money and it was all ruined by this guy who had no money. What did we, you know?
Just like Susan Sarandon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. The reason that Trump is president.
Right.
How does your comedy relate to your politics?
Oh, they're both. You know, it's kind of nice being at this point and realizing how hand in hand they are because my strengths as a candidate are usually public speaking and also debates. I mean, I remember when I ran for mayor, my debate performances were the strongest, you know, just because, you know, I'm more comfortable talking in front of a group of people than these public servants.
You're not a sweaty choke artist.
I'm not a sweaty choke artist, yeah. I mean, I remember when I ran for mayor, we had this scene in the documentary with the debate, and like some of them didn't know how to use their hands, kind of like like Kasich has these kung fu hands.
There were some funny, I think I want to make a video of his hands.
If you check out Central Ohio's Countering Kasich's videos on YouTube, you can see that we actually had a dance routine called Do the Kasichs, where we show everyone how to flap your arms and scrunch your your face and hunch your shoulders, and, yeah. and you just kind of do that for 2 minutes.
Sorry, where do you find that? You said if you check
it's
out
it's on
what?
YouTube. Central Ohioans Countering Kasich.
Got it. Okay.
I won't say the full name of the
right.
the anagram. Is that what they call it? But yeah, you can check them out. If you actually just type in anti-Kasich.
Okay, cool.
Dance moves nice. Probably be the first to pop up, but yeah, it's fascinating. So when you're a comedian, you can go into these venues, and politicians are so boring, and the policies are so boring. Now you don't want to be overly funny, you know. The balance is I find to be funny, but interesting and smart all at the same time, and poignant. You know, you got to make some good points. So it sounds like Cynthia Nixon's kind of doing this whole routine too.
Yeah. Shtick. So what do libertarians think of climate change? Because I think that's one of the areas that lots of people who maybe are libertarian friendly or like libertarianism think that maybe it's not going to solve the problem or protect us from climate change.
Yeah, I wouldn't even say climate change is the issue. I would say environmental.
Sure.
Environment. Thanks. Speaking of,
it's thunderstorming Travis said, outside. Right as the thunder started, yeah.
No, I mean, I worked at The Guardian on a project that was pro-environment.
Which I wrote a piece for. You solicited a piece for me. Thank you.
You did a great job on that one. Yeah, I think a lot of libertarians are pro-environment. They just understand that the government can't necessarily always protect it. You know, sometimes, you know, we can debate on whether regulations go far enough or they don't, or they're too lax. Or, you know, I remember, again, living in the Bahamas, and the only thing that made people take better care of the environment there was education and kind of, you know, social, you know, demonizing someone socially if they polluted or things like that. Because there was a fine. I'll never forget one of the big lessons I learned there was cruise ships. There's a fine if they dumped all their trash into the ocean. And it was cheaper for them to pay the fine than it was to actually take all the trash to wherever they had to take it to do it legally. So they just did it that way. So libertarians definitely believe in protecting the environment. I mean, I'm more of a Teddy Roosevelt conservative in that stance, I guess. And it's actually one of the few areas I do disagree with libertarians because I do think you need to have some type of standard, and someone does need to enforce it to make sure the environment is safe. Because at the end of the day, you know, libertarians, kind of their line that you don't cross is don't hurt anybody, don't take anybody's stuff. Mm-hmm. If you do, then the law needs to get involved. Right. Well, environmental impacts obviously hurt people and take people's stuff.
Right. What do you mean by take people's stuff?
It's the idea of don't take people's property.
Right. But you're saying like the...
When you harm the environment, you're harming people and harming other properties.
The properties being the physical, like land and Mother Nature and all that.
And a specific example we can talk about with Ohio is the algae blooms, the toxic algae blooms that are being created by phosphorus runoff in Lake Erie. And then they enter the streams in Ohio, and it's a real problem. And Kasich was forced to kind of deal with it. And he has a commission, and then the farmers on the commission decided that they didn't want to give in to any new regulations. So, you know, it's frustrating because libertarians are basically saying people need to self-regulate, and it's a good idea for them to do so to protect the environment. But the real question is, are people going to ever do that?
Right. Algae blooms, that's an unfortunately pretty name. It makes
it sound so delicious.
Yeah.
Well, that's like the red tides that are coming in off of the coasts of in the Gulf of Mexico in Florida. That's similar. You know, a red tide is just like a bunch of toxic algae that's all dying and sucking up the oxygen in that swath of the ocean.
Right.
So anything that swims into it immediately dies. It's kind of like a garage full of carbon monoxide.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go in there, you breathe, you get sleepy.
Right.
You know, that's what happens to all the fish. They just get sleepy and then they die and wash up on the shore.
But they're not even doing a suicide like most people do with the garage.
That's right. They're not even like whales beaching themselves.
Right.
It's non-consensual.
They're suicidal whales.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, this is unfortunate. We need to call them like algae rot or something instead of algae bloom because that just sounds so pretty. I feel like that would be a good name for a perfume, algae bloom.
You got to put the word toxic
before
them, and then it's not as pretty. Toxic algae blooms.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even Rick Scott, major Republican governor of Florida, he declared the red tide and the algae blooms a national. He declared it an emergency, and he issued an emergency order. On red tide, algae bloom.
I mean, it's equivalent to a hurricane, basically, in terms of the wildlife in the area. I mean, it's very devastating. So it's, you know, whether you deal with it from the private standpoint or the public, you got to deal with it. So I think that's one of those things that leaders of the community just have to address.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you pressure the private organizations?
Right. Because then if you're pressuring, that's not libertarian.
Yeah,
exactly.
Or like Roundup. That came out in the news recently that this guy, he was dying. It was a groundskeeper for some schools, and he was, using gallons, hundreds of gallons of Roundup a week.
From Monsanto.
Yeah, from Monsanto, and Monsanto was told they had to pay him $235 million. Because he's got terminal cancer. He won't ever see it. But,
right.
But he won the case. And the issue there is Monsanto's just like, hey, man, like, we're not going to tell people that this causes cancer. And they just hope that he died before it went to court.
Right. Yeah, the jurors gave him $289 million to a man who says he got cancer from Monsanto's Roundup weed killer.
Wow.
And it's the most popular weed killer. And
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, got some in the old backyard at my old apartment.
Really?
Yeah, we had Roundup.
In Brooklyn?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Well, there was a lady who lived next door. She kept complaining when our weeds would grow.
Oh, come
on. So I was like, look, I'm not going to pull the weeds.
That's classic Brooklyn, too. It's just like, hey, your weeds are too big over there.
I'm just going to napalm the backyard then. Fine.
Yeah, that'll be fine.
So his case went to trial because doctor said he's near death. Yes. And in California, where this case was, dying plaintiffs can be granted expedited trials. So great. If you're dying, you'll get an expedited trial. One of the perks of getting terminal cancer is you can have your case moved up. And now, of course, hundreds of more plaintiffs, including cancer patients and their spouses, have sued Monsanto.
That's what we got to do. I think, you know, we just got to, everybody's got to just start suing all these big chemical companies.
Right.
I was down in Wilmington, North Carolina, and the DuPont plant there has been linked to polluting the river for years and years. And what DuPont's strategy, you know what their strategy is? You mm-mm. think they're going to pay off all the families? You think they're going to give them what they deserve? No, mm-mm. they're just going to change the name of that specific plant so it's no longer the DuPont plant. So that means if people sue, there will be like no money to be sued for. So,
oh, nice. Yeah, because that'll be like a mom and pop.
Yeah, the old mom and pop chemical plant.
Right. It's really great that, like, even after this happened, Monsanto responded, you know, with the socially responsible way that they do. Monsanto Vice President Scott Partridge said, "We will appeal this decision and continue to vigorously defend this product, which has a 40-year history of safe use and continues to be a vital, effective, and safe tool for farmers and others." Yeah. Great. And the guy's, like, covered in lesions. And
then he called Monsanto a couple times and he was like, hey, is this normal to get these little growths on my skin after doing this? And they were like, we'll get back to you. And then they delayed and delayed and delayed.
I mean, these companies, Mitt Romney was wrong. Corporations are not people, my friend.
Right. Or if they are, they're evil people.
If they are, they've forgotten how to be people.
Right.
And that's very disappointing.
Yeah. So, let's put Monsanto out of business, shall we?
Right. And I guess what we should do is progressives and libertarians should join together on this. If we all work together, we can achieve these things.
Yeah.
Because we all have common enemies at the end of the day.
Yeah. Cancer, algae blooms.
Yeah.
Monopolies.
Toxic algae blooms. Not the pretty ones.
Right. Yeah. God, it is so disgusting that these people make this calculation. It's just bottom line. I mean, I just wish that if we could somehow make it like a lottery, like you just had to live in the conditions that you're creating. Like people who make Monsanto stuff should have to use it. You know, it's like when they ask in Michigan for people to drink from their water.
Everyone should just, all the leaders should be drinking from that water. And anytime a congressman, you know, they have this nice cushy health care for themselves.
Right, exactly.
They should just be getting on Medicaid.
Totes, yeah.
Yeah.
Just make whoever runs McDonald's right now just eat McDonald's all day, every day.
Yeah, all day, every day. It's probably be good for the beginning. You know,
it'll feel good for the first 30
tastes
days.
Good. Yeah. And actually, you know, I was in Florida. I mean, whoops, sorry. I was in California. I always confused the home of Disneyland and the home of Disney World. I just came back from L.A., from California, and I went to a wedding that almost didn't happen in Idlewild. Idlewild is... it's kind of near Palm Springs.
And you're saying it almost didn't happen because of the fires?
Because of the fires, yeah. They contained them. They didn't get to Idlewild, but my friend who lives in Palm Springs, who I visited afterwards, she said it was raining ash.
Yeah.
And people were walking around with gas, you know, with like surgical masks on, and it was hard to breathe. And that's because they're in a valley. Like Palm Springs is in more of a valley, and Idyllwild is like a mountain. It's really beautiful. The wedding went off without a hitch. Oh, hey, that's with pun intended, right? With a hitch and without another type of hitch, yeah. And of course, the beautiful thing about the fires in California is that the people putting them out are prisoners.
I did not know this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The California fires are being put out by prisoners.
They don't have volunteer firefighters?
I think they
get to volunteer, I think, to be on the chain gang that does the work, but they get paid like $1 a day or something, and they're putting their life on the line.
And then the best part is if they get released, they are not eligible to work in that. They're not allowed to do that, yeah.
In the industry they just were forced to work in.
Yes.
Wow.
So, yeah, California is paying inmates $1 an hour to fight wildfires. Since the Mendocino Complex fire began on July 27th, nearly 350,000 acres of Northern California have been scorched. And there are roughly 14,000 firefighters on duty. And among them are more than 2,000 inmates. And they're part of a volunteer, quote unquote volunteer, right? Firefighting program run by the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. They're paid $2 a day and $1 an hour when fighting an active fire. And they earn some time off of their sentences.
Yeah, and I'm okay with, I think it's cool to have, you want prison to be a place where you can be, get some education right. And some job training. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're going to be there, you might as well do something productive if you choose to.
Right, get outside sometimes, enjoy nature.
Yes, absolutely.
Enjoy flames.
Yeah. with the scorching air and ash right. that you're breathing in the whole time right. and putting your life on the line. But get paid a decent wage for it. Also, and also this seems like it's almost scab labor. It's undermining the labor market right. for people who would want to be firefighters on the outside. And then you should be able to become a firefighter after you leave because right. you just learned how to do it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So some critics like the ACLU is saying it's slave labor because they receive no death benefits and they make just $2 an hour. So that's nice. It's like a nice outdoor chain gang, but with flames.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful, I guess. Nice.
If you're
nice.
On the side, if the wind's not blowing yeah, the exactly. smoke directly into you.
Right, in which case it's kind of blinding. You can't see it.
Man, I mean, I knew the industrial prison complex was bad. But right. like, I didn't know they were also building in. I mean, I knew about some slave labor happening sure. within there where they're making license plates right. and things like that.
Or
this is a whole new level.
They have call centers in the prisons as well. There's like this great sketch on SNL when Donald Glover was hosting. And one of the last sketches was like three guys in a prison. And then they're just talking prison style. And then the phone rings. And then they put on customer service voice. And then hang up, and then it goes back to them just being in prison.
Yo, I'm telling y'all, man, I gotta get out of this prison, dog.
Man, I'm never coming back here. Got us working 30 cents an hour.
It's like modern day slavery. I feel like these walls are changing me.
I know what you mean, man. Like last week, this new inmate came up, asked me what size my sneakers was. I said, your size, bitch.
So then what happened?
They tried to grab me by my collar, right? That's when I...
Hold on a second, bro.
Good morning, customer service. My name is Philip. Oh, how can I assist you today? Oh, all right, ma'am. Please stay on the line while I direct you to a manager. All right, thank you. Then I grabbed a razor that was hiding in my butt cheeks and I cut his ear off, fam.
It was like the first time I saw an SNL, them shining light into like this, a real job and like the grim reality of what right. it is to be in prison and who you think you're talking to yeah. versus who you are talking to on the other line.
Oh my God. We used yeah. to have a game we played when we travel around America called School or Prison. So many of them look like, you know, vice yeah. versa. Sometimes you wouldn't know until you saw the sign.
The school to prison pipeline. You
yeah.
got to get
it's
people
just
ready.
Literally like barbed wire, barred windows. What is it? Oh, it's school.
Right.
Yeah.
Nice school metal detectors. Right. Police office, mobile police office inside
the
building.
Always going to have a presence.
All right, cool. Anything else you guys want to talk about?
No, I'm just so happy to be back in New York. It's just, once you leave, you realize how much you miss it. And then when you come back,
It's raining.
And there's a homeless guy yelling at everybody on the street. And then some New Yorker guy's like, "Hey, shut the fuck up, asshole."
Right. But
and
then
I'm just like,
"Oh,
welcome back."
Yeah. But then I feel like the homeless person will also be like, I mean, the guy yelling at the homeless person, if he saw the homeless person in trouble, would maybe be nice about it.
Yes. New Yorkers are the hearts of gold of the East Coast, for sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Great. So tell people where they can find you online.
Absolutely. If any of you, I'll take that again. 3, 2, 1. If any of your listeners are in Ohio or you have family in Ohio, you can check out irvineforohio.com. Read all about our platform. So you can help us out, get involved with the campaign. Donations, obviously, welcome from all around the country if you're an American citizen and not Russian.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
in which case, give them some rubles.
Yes. In that case, just meddle. Please, right. Just meddle. But beyond that, you can follow me on Twitter, Travis Irvine USA. I have the same Twitter strategy as Sarah Palin and Jim Webb. What could go wrong?
Oh, nice.
And beyond that, I will be just trying to make a difference here in Ohio. And I recommend all millennials. You know, it's not enough for us to just complain on the internet anymore. Let's get involved. Let's start running for something. And let's change the world for the better place.
Yeah. Let's complain everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
That's right.
All right. Cool. I'm Katie Halper. You can find The Katie Halper Show every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on WBAI. You can find The Katie Halper Show on iTunes, on SoundCloud, on Patreon, and make sure you go to patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. Again, that's patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show because you will get access to extended interviews like our extended interview with Travis Irvine, extra interviews with different people who aren't even on the main show, behind the scenes. And for this week, our bonus content, which is available only for Patreon subscribers, is a discussion on Alex Jones, some bonus chatting between me and Jimmy Dore about Alex Jones, and a discussion about Keith Ellison.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.